Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in very humble beginnings in Flint, Michigan. After graduating from the University of Michigan Medical School in 1964, he became a pediatrician. His private practice began with house calls, and 48 years later, he's still serving the children of Flint, Michigan. He's the author of The ABCs of Becoming Super Parents. He's a modern-day Dr. Welby. His name, Dr. Gerald Berner, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dr. Gerald Berner, the author of The ABCs of Becoming Super Parents. He started in private practice in 1964, and 48 years later, Doctor, you're still going strong.
Yes.
An honor to have you.
Thank you.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and
Yes.
your mom and dad?
Okay, well, I was born in actually Bay City, Michigan, and my mother and father were both immigrants. They came over from Europe. They lived in Latvia. They had about equivalent of a third grade education. And so I grew up in circumstances that were not the best. We were not very well off. We had enough to eat, and we lived, we weren't freezing. But the parents didn't know much English, and my mother was of the old school. She was a little bit on the side of being not spoiling the child, but using the rod, so to speak, spanking and hitting and so on. So I grew up in a vacuum, an emotional vacuum. My father was a good man. He was a religious man, but one that was very quiet, and I didn't have much to do with him, you know, to talk to him. Actually, as I grew older, and, you know, when I was 7 or 8, then I used to go and help buying cattle from the farmers. And he'd take these cattle to market, you know, like Caucallen or so on, and sell them there. And I'd sometimes he'd need help, and I'd go along with him. And I remember going to this one time, going to this old farmhouse. I saw spiders climbing up and down the wall. He says, if you don't bother them, they won't bother you.
By your own admission, you come from very humble beginnings. Your dad died
yes.
when you were 16.
Yes.
Your mom was very stern.
Yes.
How was it you had a dream to become a doctor? And most importantly, doctor, how did you achieve that dream?
Usually you have to have role models to, you know. And the one role model was a general practitioner that used to come to our house once in a while and take care of us. His name was Dr. A.H. Jacoby. Dr. Jacoby, I have something in common with a very famous person because about 25 or 30 years later, he was the one that delivered Madonna, and she was born in Bay City. So, but anyway, he was a very nice doctor and very kind and everything. I sort of, I think, got that image from him, you know, in my mind. It must be wonderful to be a doctor, you know. And that's the way it sort of started. And I did everything from selling papers, delivering newspapers and magazines and ice cream and everything, to being a short order cook, to being a janitor, to selling shoes. And then finally, the big job was getting, well, I worked in a foundry too, one of Dow's in Bay City, and finally welding. And there was a course being given by the Defoe Shipbuilding Company. It was a shipbuilding company in Bay City. And it was for a three-week course, and I knew nothing about welding, but I decided that there's no jobs around, and so I took it and became what they call a tack welder. That's the start of the weld, the bottom of the chain, and I used to weld on the ship. Made pretty good money. I started to make pretty good money at it. But I found out that there was some dangers to it, as when the guy next to me that was welding got shot by some hunters on a little island that was a little ways off. And then I found out that a fellow from Saginaw the week before had been standing on the deck, and there was a lot of water on the deck, and he had been standing in it, and he turned on that welding machine, which 440 volts without the gloves, and got electrocuted. So I could see that this was not the safest kind of work, but it was something I had to do.
You decide to follow that dream, become a doctor, and why did you decide to become a pediatrician?
Well, a pediatrician, I took a rotating internship at Hurley Hospital. That was a hospital I had heard about when I was a little child. I went through each of the rotations, surgery or obstetrics and internal medicine and all of those. And for some reason, I liked pediatrics the best. I felt maybe it was because I was still being a child. I hadn't grown up myself.
What makes a great pediatrician, Dr. Berner?
I think the biggest thing that makes, well, if not great, good, is to have a good heart. Really, really care about the children first. Money second. That's what I think makes it. Now, of course, you've got to have knowledge. You've got to be pretty good. You can't just be a kind-hearted person. But I think what makes really a great one is somebody who has pretty good knowledge of his profession and has a good heart and wants to help the kids, wants to really help them if they're sick.
We're talking to Dr. Jerry Berner, who grew up Bay City, became a great success, along with Madonna. A week from tonight, Madonna performs at the halftime during the Super Bowl. I don't know, Doctor, if you're going to be involved with the Super Bowl, but No. This is Anything is Possible, and I'm Jack Rasula, News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Dr. Jerry Berner, who got a degree from the University of Michigan School of Medicine, has become a pediatrician, and has served the poor of Flint for the last 48 years. Doctor, you've been with thousands of children over the last five decades. What have you learned from children?
Well, I think I've learned that children are a lot smarter than you think they are. As when I asked this one little boy that I was checking over, I got through checking, and he brought in his snake to me to check over. He opened it up, and there was Pete the snake, and he showed me all the bugs that were rolling around Pete. And he said he wasn't eating, and he wanted to know what was wrong with him. So I told him, well, I think Pete is depressed. Do you have enough money to go to a snake psychiatrist? They charge $200 an hour. And he said, no, I don't think so. So I says, well, you better put Pete back with his family. I think that'll make him feel better. And so he did that, and when he came to see me in future visits, he said Pete was very happy then.
You've worked with a lot of sick children.
Yes.
And a number of terminally ill children.
Yes.
Who have invariably great courage.
Yeah.
What have you learned from these children that had terminal illnesses?
Well, sometimes they don't fully understand the seriousness of the disease. Like this one little girl that had a type of lipoid disease that accumulated in the brain and in her organs. But as she went along, she was fairly expressive and cheerful and so on. But then it started to affect her mentality. She died, but she didn't know anything. And then there's this little boy that had hemophilia. And he was 4 years old, and he would come in for the factor VIII transfusions, you know, and he was handling it quite well. The parents were very attentive to him. On one occasion, he had an acute abdomen where the surgeons I called in felt it was an appendix. Now, to operate on a child with hemophilia, that's a rough go. We gave him all the blood we could, the factor VIII we could, and everything. But he still, when cutting him open, and he did have an appendix, but he bled to death. And I had to go and tell the parents, and it was quite a hard thing to do because he was such a nice-looking little boy.
When we were young, you almost never heard about cancer. And you sure didn't hear about cancer in people 20, 15, 10, 8, which you hear today. How do you explain, Doctor, cancer in children today?
I can't explain it. That's the problem. I can't explain it. They get children seem to have propensity primarily for leukemia and lymphomas. Hodgkin's disease is in a little bit older kids, and also the tumors of bone tumors, and they just come. Some people think it's some kind of a severe injury to the leg, a knock on the leg, or something like that. The leukemias, of course, they've been thought of be caused by things like too much radiation and other type of medications or so on, but nobody's sure. And so it's a difficult thing to think about and to figure out, but the truth is that we really don't know why children get cancer.
Dr. Berner, if you could tell parents this evening one thing about raising children, what would it be?
If I could tell parents one thing about raising children, it would be to always be kind, never use vocal abuse or physical abuse. You've got to, if you want to create some kind of so-called punishment, it's got to be something like taking away certain privileges or making a timeout where they have to go sit down in a chair or a bed or so on. But it's very difficult to do because a child is like a little animal. Freud coined three psychologies of the mind: the id, which is the animal nature of the person, the superego, which is the conscience, and then the ego, which is the resultant of the two, the superego and the id. Well, a child's mostly all id from the first 4 years. They're an animal. They don't understand it. And gradually, as they get to 4 to 5, they start to develop a little bit of conscience. They start to realize that they have to share with others and start to. But before that, you're really, if you're abusive, you're really hitting them for nothing because they don't understand it. The main thing that a parent has to do is make sure that they're not injuring themselves and not injuring anybody else, and try to deal with it in that nature. It's not easy, but it's if that was the one thing to tell people, because these children have a resultant hatred in them. And it might be toward the parents, it might be toward the world later on. And the frustration those kids want to explore everything, and they don't know what's good and what's bad. I've seen many times when parents take a child to a restaurant, for instance, and they're 2.5 or 3, and they say, well, now you sit down and be good. Now you can't touch the fork, you can't touch the knife, and stuff like that. And the kid, they expect him to be a gentleman. And the kids are not gentlemen at that age. They're kids. They get up, they toss the food around, they take the forks, they get into everything. And if they become too wild, the only thing you can do is take them out of there. Not slam them, not hit them, not punish them, or so on.
A couple months ago, I heard a speech by a noted expert in parenting. And she ended the speech by saying, I want to leave the parents tonight with two words. No and time. And she was talking about children now, I think, in their teens. But talk about those two words, no and time.
Well, the no to children is primarily important in the edible period of 5 or 6, where they can start to understand it. Through the elementary stage, we're 6 to, say, 10 or 11, you know. And then where you say firmly no, they are starting to understand it. The elementary stage is a stage where they become cognizant of themselves and the world around them. And so no means something then. When you say no to a 3-year-old, it doesn't mean anything. Or a 2.5-year-old, it doesn't mean anything. So you've got to use the word no at the correct time in a child's life.
And what about spending time with kids?
And spending time, there just is nothing more important, especially during the elementary school stage. The parent should spend the time to inculcate in the children what the dangers lie ahead in the future, in puberty and as a young adult. And this includes everything from smoking to drinking to drugs, sex, and so on, and speak to them at certain times. Maybe you take time at supper time, or you have a little time afterwards. But you gradually go over it time and again, and it's important to spend time. Now, spending time with them to, say, go swimming with them, or it's important to, for role modeling in the edible period, it's important for the father to spend time with the boys and the mother to spend time with the girls to get a firm role model.
We're talking to Dr. Jerry Bruner, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Dr. Jerry Bruner, who for the last 48 years has served the poor children in Flint, Michigan. We're also blessed this evening to have his daughter, Francine Wonder, with us in the studio. And I've asked her to share a poem entitled Tribute to a Pediatrician, and in her case, Tribute to Her Dad, Francine.
As a pediatric doctor, there's a special gift you hold, one that's honored in the heavens, way beyond the finest gold. Way beyond the finest silver or the finest piece of art is this gift that you've been given to an ill or injured heart. To a heart in need of comfort, need of empathy and peace, you are like a light in darkness, causing pain and fear to cease. For there is no greater comfort that a suffering child can feel than to know how much you love them in the midst of their ordeal. In the midst of every crisis, you are there to make them whole. You are there to ease their suffering. It's a passion in your soul. It's a passion without measure, one there is no equal to, and the reason why the heavens take the time to honor you. See, there is no higher calling that a doctor can fulfill than to care for injured children, be their voice, and peace instill. Peace in knowing you'll protect them, do what's right, though they can't speak. Treat each symptom that arises every day of every week. So above this earthly planet, as a tribute to your name, hangs a stethoscope of crystal in a diamond-covered frame. And this frame is a reflection of the gift you hold inside. As a healer of the children, you're forever heaven's pride.
Tribute to a pediatrician, recited by Dr. Berner's daughter, Francine Wunder. Thank you. Doctor, what one piece of advice would you give to grandparents?
I guess the one piece of advice I'd give to grandparents, of course, they should be kind to their grandchildren, and they are allowed to spoil them, but they should not correct the parents in the way the children are raised. They had their chance to raise the children, their own children, and now they're there just to enjoy the grandchildren and to have a good time with them and not to tell the parents how to raise them.
If we could give all people true self-esteem, the world's problems would go away. Addictions, drugs, alcohol, sexual abuse, etc. How can you give a child true self-esteem?
You've got to start early to give a child true self-esteem. The first stage is the bonding stage. That's where the child sucks on the mother's breast, is breastfed, held. Both parents should hold the child, not just the mother, the father, and love the child and kiss them so that the child bonds as he grows and he becomes like 8 months, 9 months, 10 months, he knows the mother and the father right away. He's bonding with them. Then comes the next stage, which is the anal period, where the child becomes very aggressive. And this is the stage where the parents should not use any abuse. And trying to be the gentlest you can with your children during these stages will help them feel that they, as they grow into the Oedipal period and into the latent stage, they'll feel that they're a good person. You know, what makes them maybe feel they're no good or bad is when somebody yells at them, hits them, slams them, is derogatory toward them, and so on. And this is where children lose esteem. And so it's mainly the parents that have to be conscious of this in bringing up their children, for the children to have this good esteem. Now, if they see there's other relatives that might be a little bit mean or something, they might mention it to the other relatives too. But primarily, the esteem comes in the children. Esteem, true esteem, comes in the children from having good, loving parents.
We're talking to Dr. Jerry Berner, who's written the book, The ABCs of Becoming Super Parents. What do you say to a listener tonight, a parent tonight, who says, I'm just working so hard, and I just get frustrated. I don't have the patience I need. I know I'm wrong, but doctor, I just don't have the patience I always need. What should I do?
That is a good question, and I think that's the problem with many parents. They're actually good people, but they'll get frustrated and they'll yell at their kid or slap them or so on because they're frustrated and they're angry and so on. And whether they should try to find a way of making more time for themselves to relax, or they find a way to realize that when they lose their patience, they've got to go into another room and relax for a while. But they've got to try to change this feeling of frustration the best they can. perhaps their job. Maybe they can get a different job, get different hours, or so on. But I think that if they're doing that to their child, it's a question whether the job is more important or it's more important the way they're raising the child. Because in the long run, the job might not have been that necessary. And the child, if he turns out to be a juvenile delinquent or a child that hates everyone, then you see the wrong that you've done.
In an earlier segment of the show, you mentioned that from the years, I think, 7 through 13 is when you've got to talk to your kids about smoking, drinking, sexual activity, etc. Specifically, what do you tell the kids?
When you're talking about these things, you say that there might be a momentary enjoyment to smoking or drinking or sex or so on, but you've got to inculcate a little bit of fear in them. You've got to tell them the things that can go wrong, diseases they can get from this. When they're 7, 8, 9, they start to understand that man does not live forever and that these diseases can kill a child. He could actually die in puberty. And this is when the child is going to meet most of these problems, when he goes from the young teen to the young adult. And if he doesn't have an understanding of the dangers involved and what they can do to his health, then he may have some short enjoyment and he may suffer very great consequences.
Peter Nielsen, Peter's principal, precedes the show. And he says that this is the first generation where the parents will outlive the kids because of the obesity. I mean, we weren't obese when we were kids because we walked everywhere. We didn't have that much to eat, and we got on our bike. Talk to us about child obesity.
I try to take it in stages. Stop drinking fruit juices and eat only fruit. And the parents should see that they do exercise at least 2-3 times a week. And it has to be exercise that increases the heart rate. It can't just be walking around or, oh, my kid's active, they say. He does this, he does that. But that doesn't knock off the pounds. What knocks off the pound is pounds are some real active exercise that increases the heart rate.
We're talking to Dr. Jerry Berner, and I'm Jack Krasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Krasula, and we're with Dr. Jerry Berner, a modern-day Dr. Welby. Doctor, you've, for 48 years, you've served the poor in Flint, Michigan. You've never served the rich. Why not?
I think that the poor needed the services of a pediatrician as well as other people, and I found out that a lot of my cohorts did not want to serve the poor. They rejected their type of insurance, which was Medicaid, and so I accepted it because I felt that these people needed attention just as any other people. Now, if a person's rich and they came to me, I treated them, but I accepted all insurances. And I did not turn anybody away. If a person couldn't pay me, they said, oh, I'll pay. I know I owe you money. I said, well, I was making a pretty good living. I mean, I didn't need to force a person. So I just gave them the assurance that when you get a chance, pay me and so on. And because I was making a pretty good living anyway, you know, and so I didn't, I'm a type of person, if I'm doing fairly well, I don't need yachts. I just need a nice, comfortable place. And so money buys things mainly, you know, and I never needed that to that degree. That's why.
in 7 years of doing this show, whenever I've had a guest that has worked with the poor, they've always made a statement. They say, I've learned much more from the poor than I ever did from the rich. Why is that?
I think because poorer people have a closer feeling about things, whereas rich people perhaps are guarded against feeling many of the problems of the world. And if you're rich, you might overlook many blights that are around you, that are in the world be around you, before you and everything. When a person is poorer as a child, and they do become somewhat better off in life, in their work, they have a more understanding of what it means to help other poor people than if you're rich, born rich, and you have the best of everything. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't some rich people that don't have feelings for other people, sure. But I think when you're poor, you grasp the whole picture, what the world is really like to most people. And most people are not rich. Most people are having a hard time of it. And so they come in contact with everyday problems much more than wealthy people that have the money to sidestep them.
Dr. Berner, you're 79 years old.
That's right.
You've served children in Flint for 48 years.
Yes.
You keep doing it every morning. Why do you keep working?
Well, first of all, I like children. And even on days that I am tired and don't feel like working, I get lost in my practice in taking care of problems. You know, there's a challenge. The answer to a sickness or a disease or a problem that a child has isn't apparent. And then you think out of the box. All of a sudden, some kind of an idea comes to you. Maybe that should be done, an X-ray or something like this. And when that happens and you do the X-ray or you do the test and it comes back positive, like, for instance, I had a little girl. She was around 2 years of age, and the mother said that she was going to the bathroom a lot. So I asked her, does she seem in pain with it? You know, like a urinary tract infection? No. Is there, I thought, well, if you urinate a lot, possibly diabetes or something. I think I'll just run a urine on her. And by God, it came back 3+ sugar. And I caught it before this child could have gone into what we call diabetic acidosis, which is if you don't catch something like that. And she seemed like a normal child, healthy, running around and everything. But she was she had a 300 blood sugar.
People say that maybe the closest thing we can ever see of what God is like is to look at an infant when they smile. You've seen a lot of infants smile. What do you see when you see an infant smiling?
I take an infant after I get through examining them, even after sometimes I get through giving them shots, and I'll lift them up under the arms, and I'll jump them up and down on the bench, and they'll give off a smile that the mother has not seen them. They're enjoying themselves so much, you know. And so I feel that there is true enjoyment when I look at a child in their eyes. One time I can see true enjoyment.
You also get to see a mother's love.
Oh, yes,
every day.
Yes.
Talk to us about a mother's love.
Most mothers have great love for their children. While they're holding them, they're kissing them all the time. It gets in the way of my looking in the throat and the ears and stuff, but I wait for them to get through kissing the kid, their child, and everything. And most mothers have great love. She's got this maternal instinct to love the child. And the child is a physical and a psychological extension of the mother. The child is only a psychological extension of the father. That child has come out of the mother's insides, her inner being. And when she loves that child, she loves herself.
A couple weeks ago when I came up to Flint and spent an hour in your office, you made a statement, quote, "Jack, I pray every day." Dr. Berner, what do you say to God when you pray, and what do you pray for?
There's a prayer I say for my family. I want them to be healthy. They should have no misfortunes, and they should be successful in all their endeavors, whether it's getting a job or passing a test. And that's one prayer. The other prayer is that I ask God to help me to take life as it comes and to take death as it comes, that he helps me to diagnose and treat the children that I see that day, and helps me to diagnose and treat them to the best of my ability.
And that partnership between you and God for the last 48 years has been a winning combination.
So far, I think.
As our time winds down tonight, what advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Education is important. They must get an education, and they should try to live an honest life and to have love for your fellow man. And it's not easy sometimes because not everybody is a wonderful person, but you've got to try to forgive the best you can, unless, God forbid, there's a horrible injury done to you. That you got to ask God about.
Dr. Jerry Berner, your life is the very epitome of what has made America great. Keep up the great, great work.
Thank you very much.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall. Believe in yourself.